Hello, it's Dan Le Batard. I wanted to talk to this guy, Saints linebacker DeMario Davis, because he and Josh Norman did something rather extraordinary. They pooled their money to buy an immigrant his American freedom. They were touched by a story. They were touched by a poem. They were touched by their own experiences and how there, but for the grace of God, all of us could go if we hadn't been born in this country. And DeMario Davis pours his life into good causes because he believes it is his duty as a human being before a football player to help others. And so I wanted to talk to him about how it is that he got involved with this cause when it wasn't necessarily his cause. And he will explain that to you here, a fairly extraordinary story. And we will get to that in a second. But before we do so, in order to keep all this stuff free around here that we're doing at Le Batard and Friends, and you should check out our football special. We're proud of it. It has some of the elements from Mina Kimes and Sarah Spain and Marty Smith and Stu Gatz that you've grown used to here with the Le Batard and Friends Network. But before we get to DeMario Davis, and before we tell you more about that football special, Mike, can you please tell the people who it is that's sponsoring this, keeping this content free?
Thank you, Dan. This week's South Beach Session is brought to you by the fine folks at ZipRecruiter. We all know about what a challenge it is to hire the right people. It's difficult to find the right qualified candidates. It takes a long time. Sometimes there's just way too many applicants. ZipRecruiter is a way to make it all easy for you. That's right. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find the right people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. And as those applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each and every one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEACH. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire.
All right, let's get to this interesting story involving DeMario Davis, the Saints linebacker. He is very good at articulating why it is that you should get behind some of his causes. Let's get to DeMario Davis. This should have been a bigger story throughout the sports landscape. DeMario Davis and Josh Norman, they ended up in a place that I didn't expect them to be, believing in a cause that is sometimes outside the realm of where athletes tend to look. And I wanted to talk to DeMario about what it is that made him put together money for a cause in which he and Josh Norman spent about $50,000 because they believed, or they were touched by a poem by a 22-year-old in the middle of America's immigration crisis. Thank you for making the time, DeMario. Why did you do this? How did you get involved with this?
So Josh and I have kind of been involved in this immigration arena for about 2 years. Two years ago, we went down to the border, right, I think when those visuals kind of hit, you know, all news media lines about those kids being separated from parents and sleeping in these cages. And so we wanted to kind of go down there and see what was going on. And what we got down there and saw kind of pretty much, you know, broke our heart for anybody that's trying to come across the border, whether from Mexico or asylum seeking. We just wanted to do what we can. And so we just kind of did backpacks for the second leg of their journey once they got in the States for the people that were on the other side. We went back this year, people who were right outside the border having to sleep on the ground for 2-3 months. We bought them blankets and tents and fed them. Just trying to do every little bit we can, but also during it all, we've just been trying to raise awareness of what's happening, you know, here in our country in a real way. You know, and just telling people, you know, not necessarily just read headlines and think that's what's happening. It should be happening because the people are bad. I mean, these are human beings, regular people just like you and I with families, just trying to find safety, and they've been mistreated, and just something that you wouldn't expect to be happening here on our homeland. And so we just been trying to raise awareness around these issues as well. Now it's even ramped up even more. Now You have the ICE raids where it pretty much is going into communities and terrorizing communities and snatching people out of homes. The story with Jose Bello and how he's rounded up, you know, it touched so many people. And it touched me specifically because right around the time that we were able to get around Jose Bello's story was 700 families were rounded up in Mississippi. And a lot of those kids went to school, and when they came back, their parents were gone. And there was no plan of action set up for these kids. They just came home to empty houses. And you're like, you know, no way does a kid go off to first grade, second grade, dropped off at school by their parents, and then they return home. Or catch the bus to go to school, and then they return home, and their parents are gone. That's not humane. And so we saw Jose's story, 22-year-old kid in school, farm worker, you know, pretty much just speaking his voice, talking about the pain that he feels, his family feels, his friends feel. And because, you know, it may have been perceived as attacking or against the status quo, you know, he's detained. And they later came to say it was because he had a outstanding DUI charge, but the timing of it just doesn't add up and looks, you know, real suspicious. So now we're going into, we're attacking people because of freedom of speech. You know, and so all the ideals and morals that make our country great, one, just make sure that we're holding our country accountable to those things, to make sure we're living that out. And, you know, that's how we kind of got behind it, you know, because, you know, here's somebody who's speaking for what's going on, and that story resonates with so many other stories that are out there that are not being told. And so we just wanted to kind of get behind Jose and champion him. And who knows, maybe he'll be the voice, become a voice and a face for this movement that needs to happen for these people.
I hear children in the background. What did you see specifically that moved you this way 2 years ago? Were you, it was images of children?
Yeah, it was definitely images of children. You see those kids sleeping in those cages. And that's what's moved Josh and I both, because we both have kids. You know, you have to put yourselves in those shoes. I would never want to be separated from my kids. You know, my kids have to wonder what's going on with their parents. Or we have to wonder what's going on with our kids. You know, when these people get detained, they put in these holding centers. People have to remember, this is not supposed to be a jail. This is supposed to be a processing center where they're getting all their paperwork processed. It's almost worse than jail. First, the treatment and the setup of the facilities, horrible facilities, horrible food, and then they're not getting answers to the question that they're asking. You know, they don't know where their kids are. They don't know who their kids are with. You know, that's the most scary thing right there. I would never want to be in a place detained and I don't know what's going on with my children and nobody's giving me answers. I think, you know, like, yeah, you hear my kids in the background and just happy and peaceful at home. I don't ever want to take, because I'm in the safety of my home and happy in my home, that I don't want to look at somebody else's burden and not be able to put myself in their shoes. You know, I don't ever want to take a second for granted that I have peace of mind and I have, you know, things and blessings, and not want the same for my neighbors. And that's what moves us to act on these things.
Were there any particular things? Obviously, you've given us some of the details here, but what did you see that was most heartbreaking? What did you see that you and Josh got together afterward and were like, look, we really need to put some money behind this?
Well, the first year we went down there, it was the despair and the hopelessness. You know, these people had been, you know, traveling, and they were just getting off the bus, coming from these ICE centers, and they were getting ready to get on the transportation from the ICE centers, get on a bus and go to their sponsors here in the country. And just the despair and the fear that was on the faces of these parents. Some had been reunited with their kids, some hadn't been reunited with their kids. And now they have a 5-day journey and they don't have any resources, you know? And so like that broke us, because you're looking at these parents who want to be able to take care of their kids. And they don't know if everything, I don't know what they had witnessed, you know, at the ICE centers, you know, at that point and what they had been through on their journey. But just the hopelessness and the fear. I mean, none of the people speak English, and there's nobody but the people who have foundations who are helping the people. Government has nothing set up to get these people assisted, to get them to their destination once they've been approved and released. And so that's all we wanted to do that first time we were down. We bought them pizza and got them backpacks with toiletries and toys for the kids. And, man, they lit up. And those key people, they didn't speak a word of English, but, you know, they were hugging us and just saying, gracias, 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 gracias. And so thankful we realized, man, this is just a big problem. And then we went down to this past off season. You know, we went to the other side of the border. You know, and people out there sleeping on the ground right on the other side of the border, waiting for their number to get called, asylum seekers who have been on the run from their country and they're still not safe. You know, some of them been traveling, you know, 1-2 months just to get to the border, and then they get to the border and they have to sleep outside on the ground because it's pretty much like a DMV. They wait on their number to get called, and the minute that they leave, if their number is called and they're not there, they're going to go into the next number and they miss their chance. So they have to sleep out on the ground, on tents, on mats. And a lot of these people aren't poor. They come from good professions. Some of them are professors. Some of them are dentists. You know, some of them are teachers. But they're in fear for their life, for their children's life, because the atrocities that they're facing in their home country. And they're still not safe. Whoever put the threat on their life that has them fleeing can still get to them as long as they're on the other side of the border. And so that's the problem. They're out there sleeping on the grounds. And so, you know, a heartbroken again, because anytime you're serving food to these people and a parent is carrying a newborn baby and she has her children, a 3-year-old kid holding their plate up, you know, to be served, because the mom's hand is full trying to carry a plate for herself and holding the baby. And then you realize, like, hold up, they've been sleeping on the ground for a month and a half, 2 months, just sitting outside, right outside our borders, just trying to come to safety. And, you know, it just goes, cuts right through all the myths and all the phobias that are put out and all the fear mongering to tell you these people are dangerous and this and that. And you realize, man, these are families. These are mothers. These are fathers. These are babies. And I just constantly keep looking at these kids like, what if this was my kids? You know, I would want somebody to fight for me. I would want somebody to say something. And that's what we've been doing.
Your father served in the Army. You have been someone who has dedicated himself to service. Does big, tough DeMario Davis, as he moved to tears when he sees these things and is discussing them with Josh Norman, or have you done so much of this that you're able to do it at least a little bit unemotionally?
No, man, none of it is unemotional. You know, it's hard not to break down every time you see this stuff. It's hard not to break down every time you see this stuff, especially the little baby. On Josh's last trip, you know, he was sharing with me down at one of the centers, a mother had just had a child. She had just had a child via C-section. 2 days later, she's there on her own with her 2-year-old child and the baby she just had with C-section. And she's completely exposed. So here it is. She got a 2-year-old baby that's trying to help her. She can barely move. Then she's trying to take care and make sure that the newborn baby has nutrition. And fortunately, they were down there at the time. They were able to buy her flight, get her to her sponsor, because she was going to have to get on a bus and travel for, you know, another week and a half, and she probably wasn't going to be able to do it. And so, you know, you can't see stuff like that and just not be moved. It's definitely so much that you definitely cannot even come anywhere near to becoming numb to it. And, you know, it just needs to be even more general awareness of what's going on, but not even the awareness of it, but people move to do something, because we all can do something no matter how big, how small. We all can do something. As long as we all working in the same direction, we can see better days.
For those of you who do not know this story, DeMario Davis and Josh Norman helped post a $50,000 bail for a 22-year-old Jose Bayo. Now, can you tell the people why and how his poem moved you? Because of your work, he is now free. He is now someone who has gained his freedom. I can't even imagine his level of gratitude.
I mean, the poem is powerful. Anybody who hasn't heard the poem should go and definitely listen to it. Very well written and very bold for him to go and speak that where he spoke it at. But I don't know if I was moved more by the poem as I was the injustice behind what happened because he read the poem. Here's somebody who's using their First Amendment rights and freedom of speech, and he's being attacked for it. Not only attacked for it, detained for it. Not only detained for it, detained for 3 months for it, and probably longer if we hadn't come along. I think the bigger picture is what we want people to see is injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Well, that's a quote from Dr. King. But I think what he was getting at when he said it is, if you just continue to let these things happen because they're not happening to you, what are you going to do when they happen to you? Everybody's going to be gone. There's going to be nobody to stand up for you. So if we allow people to just be locked up because they say something that's against what society is telling us to believe. Where's our freedom? You know, and that's what our country is built on. And so we have to look. Me and Josh were screaming this 2 years ago, what's going on? Now it's gone from down at the border to it's happening in our country. So they're not just being mistreated at the border. They're being mistreated in our country. Anytime you have a raid to go into a community and say, hey, go lock them all up, and half of them are going to be illegal. That's stereotypical. That's stereotyping. That labeling. You know, how you know in a community that half of them going to be a label, you know, because I'm looking at it, okay, what they say, go grab all the felons. You know, I think they're going to come to the black community next. If you don't speak out now, when it's your turn, there won't be nobody to speak out for you. And so we have to be, you know, more conscious of what's happening in the bigger picture, because, you know, this could be a danger to more than just immigrants.
You mentioned sort of the un-American feel of it. Your father served, fought to protect those ideals. My guess is those were in your home very early in life.
Yes, yes, yes. My father has actually fought nine tours. And as he spoke to me, we've had multiple conversations. And that's what he has fought for, those ideals. When, you know, we have to stop being naive to or want to act like America is perfect or has ever been perfect. You know, nothing is perfect. First of all, we all got things to work on. Everything has areas where it can get better. Our country has areas to get better. But our ideals are right. Our ideals and our morals are right. Everyone should believe in those ideals and those morals. I mean, there are no better ideals and morals. But that's what they are until we live up to those ideals and morals. They're just ideals and morals. We still have a ways to go to get there, to live that out. And the thing that we cannot afford to do is go backwards. We can't go and allow the things happen in our country that we fought against as early as World War II. Civil War and things of that nature, things that we fought against. Now they're happening in our country, and it's almost like we don't know if we want to celebrate it or oppose it. We celebrate the fall of the Berlin Wall, and now we're building our own wall. Oh, okay, we got to wake up and pay attention. When you start talking about camps, I don't care what you want to call the camps. We're talking about camps. Those type of camps in our history books were only talked about in one place. We have to be conscious of that.
You've gone from heartbroken to pissed off.
But I think it's just emotion. I take my stance very seriously. I'm a believer first, and we're called to serve our neighbor. And I think it comes a point where you say it boldly, and then it comes a point where you have to scream it, even if you have to go down screaming. You know, and that's what it means to be who you say you are. And we're called to serve our fellow man. We're called to serve our neighbors. We're called to stand up for the oppressed. We're told to speak out for the poor. And if you look at so much stuff, a lot of the times it happens to poor people. You know, somebody like Jose Bello, and who gets a $50,000 cash bond, and he makes $20,000 a year. How is he going to pay that? Now he's being locked up for being poor. Because if he can post that bail, he can go home and be back with his family until it all gets settled out. But if he can't, there are people who commit way worse crimes in our society, and because they make a lot of money, they can go home and it never gets talked about. It gets swept under the rug. You know, and so we just have to take a real good look at ourselves and who we want to be, take another look at our morals and our ideas and make sure that we're living up to them.
That's one of the other things right here. You are not just a freedom of speech guy. You're objecting to our cash bail system.
Yeah. I've been an advocate to end mass incarceration in our country for a while. You know, we have the highest incarceration rate in the world a couple times over. I think it's so much that we need to look at that's going on. 70% of our jail population is there pretrial, meaning they're there because they haven't had their trial. They haven't had their trial date, and most of them, a lot of that is due to cash bail. And so it's been people who have been locked up because they're poor. You know, in a country where our ideals and our morals are innocent until proven guilty. Well, you haven't been proven guilty. Why are you in jail for 7-8 months? Because you're poor. And that's just not right, because those people are losing jobs. Oftentimes they lose their homes. And then it becomes a cyclical nature, because that's going to affect the spouse. That's going to affect the children. That's going to affect the next generation that's raising up in that situation. You know, and so people already have a bad hand because they're poor. Now you're pushing them farther into poverty, which becomes oppression.
It sounds like you know the history of mass incarceration in this country, and specifically as a black man, you know the damage it's done to your community.
Yeah, not just in you go all the way back. You know, first it started with slavery, and then it moved to the chain gang, and then it moved to Jim Crow, and then it moved to the war on drugs, and now you got mass incarceration. You know, there have always been means of systematic oppression, not just against black people, even though a lot has been done to black people. There have been systematic oppression that are in place, you know, and so you go all the way back to World War II, where we fight for freedom in other countries, and then you come back home and you still here, treated here, second-class citizens. So that's where you talk about, you know, America, we got to make sure that we are honest in our conversation and our dialogue. We haven't quite got it right, and we have never had it right. But that's not to say that we can't get there if we continue to chase our ideas and morals. We as a people have to hold our country accountable to that. That's what it means to have true patriotism, that when we get it right, we're going to celebrate. When we're getting it wrong, we're going to work on it and fix it. But we have to be very careful not to go towards nationalism, whether we praise our country, regardless if we got it right or got it wrong, because that's when bad things can happen.
I don't know if you read Ta-Nehisi Coates, but he's been on our show, and we would talk to him about whether he felt something in the way of hope. And he'd feel pretty hopeless because of this history that you speak of. When I read a quote from you, and this is the quote, when someone asks you if you understand that you're not actually helping every situation by helping a situation, you say the following, quote, "I heard a story once. There was a bunch of shellfish on the ground, and a guy was picking up all of the shellfish and throwing them one by one. There was a million shellfish out there, and another guy was like, 'You're never going to be able to save all those shellfish.' But every one he threw out there, he said, 'I saved that one, though. I saved that one.' And I think that's the way we have to look at it. It's every little bit that you do. It's helping somebody. But how often do you feel hopeless?"
I rarely ever feel hopeless, because my hope is not placed here. My hope is placed on something much higher than here. My hope is on the eternal God. And I know at the end of my day, when I'm done, all I want to hear is those words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." I'm just trying to live my time well. I'm trying to run my race well, meaning do the things that he's asked me to do. And I think the way we move away from that hopeless feeling is to live inside of like that story, understanding that everything that you do is significant to somebody. It's significant to somebody. People are not going to remember you for what you do. They're going to remember you for what you did for them. And so every time you change a little boy's life, or you change a woman's life, or you change a man's life or a family's life, you help them. You help them. And you've done something. And that's powerful. And because our society is made up of a bunch of little bitty families, a bunch of different size family, one person, two people families, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 people families. That's what our society is made of. And that's what you have to look at. And so especially when you're facing, you know, situations such as these, you know, we can take care of one man's bail. That impacts him, and it impacts an entire generation.
You got a man freedom. You got a man. You took up a cause that wasn't yours. You took up a cause on a stranger you did not know. And you actively, you and Josh Norman, got this man freedom. Has he reached out to you since then?
Yeah, so we've talked through our different mediums that connected us, and we're actually trying to set up a conference call with him so we can have some dialogue about where we can go from here.
And are you proud of yourself? I know it's a small thing, but the lengths you're going to in order to, you know, backpack with these people or see the conditions they're in, or to spend money on a cause, these are not lengths that are for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a situation of I'm proud of. It's just, honestly, for us, we talk about it all the time. It's like, man, this is what we're just supposed to do. This is what you're supposed to do as a human being. Just empathy and compassion. You know, it's weird that we live in a place where we're celebrated for acts like these. Like, this is what we should be doing. Like, we're called to love our neighbors as ourselves, do unto others the golden rule, do as others that you would have them do unto you. I hope nobody would watch me in my misery, being oppressed by a system, not use their resources or use themselves to hold out a helping hand. I hope that wouldn't happen to me. That's what it means to be a human being, to have compassion, to have empathy.
How much did you learn from your cousin, the late quarterback Steve McNair?
I learned a lot, not just from him, but all my family members. We were close-knit family. My grandmother had 10 kids. He's the son of the oldest child, Samuel McNair. And, you know, we always together on holidays. And that just was instilled in us the importance of family, the importance of putting God first, the importance of spending time with each other, the importance of, you know, never taking anything for granted. And I think that's where those roots were instilled deep inside of me, you know, back when we used to play football in the street, you know, on McLaurin Street in Collins, Mississippi, small town that you would you couldn't find it on the map. You would miss it if you drive through it. But, you know, there something was birthed inside of, I think, all of my family members and definitely inside of me that, you know, there's something great inside of all of us, and we need to put that on display. And we need to help others see that greatness inside of them.
How would you describe your upbringing to somebody who didn't know anything about you?
My grandmother, my mom had me when she was 16, and so it was just me and her. And my mom needed to finish school, so I stayed with my grandmother. And my grandmother was a deeply religious woman, and she taught us right from wrong. And I think that's where I got my foundation from. And when I went back to live with my mom, of course, when my dad been in the Army and all over the place, he never actually stayed in our home. It was just me and her. And, of course, you know, living in the environment I grew up in, you know, I fell into the streets, got into drugs, got into gangs, got expelled from school when I was in high school, went to jail my first year in college. I was pretty rough. But then when I got to college, a man took me to the side. Our team chaplain ended up discipling me, leading me to Christ, and that transformed my life. And ever since then, I've been on a mission to serve him. And I think that is due to the foundation that was laid on me when I was a child, that even though I fell astray, I was able to return back home. So even though I fell off and was headed in a wrong direction, that foundation was laid in me that I was able to return to. And even if somebody never had that foundation, I still think there's hope for them, because just that powerful transformation that happened to me. You know, my life was a complete 180 versus where I could have been. I could have very easily been in dead or in jail based on the decisions that I was making.
How bad would you say that it was?
For me?
Yes. When you say that, you know, it could have gone another way, you know that the systemic things in America and the systemic things that tend to happen when sometimes you have a father who's not around or a 16-year-old mother, and then you fall into some of those things, and then you're in a desperate environment and it goes the wrong way. You have, yeah, when you say 180, it doesn't even begin to describe what it is. The man I'm talking to is not that 15-year-old.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you're talking about 0.0001, the odds of me making it to where I am today from where I came from. I mean, you're talking about beating the odds. The odds were, you know, definitely stacked against me. But that just, it just goes to show you how great God is. And I think he used my story to be empowering and encourage other people. Every part of it. I wouldn't trade none of my journey for anything. But, I mean, you think about society, you know, being a young black man, when I was expelled from school, they never had to let me come back. You know, the people wanted to press charges on me, and they didn't. And so I was expelled when I was a sophomore. I could have missed my junior and senior year, but they let me come back. When I went to jail, when I was in college, had I not been a kid that was in college on scholarships and my coach posted my bail was $10,000. My mama didn't have $10,000. I didn't have it. Nobody in my family had $10,000. So I could have been locked up like a lot of these people for 9-10 months. Lost my scholarship, you know, lost my opportunity to make something of myself. My life would look way different now. And so all those chances, I can only give a credit to God. Even when I got my scholarship to go to Arkansas State, I sat in my car and cried for 30 minutes because I had an opportunity to make it out of Mississippi, which none of my friends had. None of my friends. You know, and I was like, well, God, why did you choose me? And so, man, it's definitely been a journey, but it's definitely been, I applaud not myself, I applaud God, because I know without him, I would not be the man that I am today. It would be impossible.
forgive my ignorance here. I don't know why you were in jail, and I don't know the nature of what violence was roiling within you. What was happening?
So both of mine were stealing. One, I stole when I got expelled from high school. I stole a wallet from a kid. His parents wanted to press charges on me because I just took the wallet out of his hand and ran from. And then when I was in college, I got arrested for shoplifting. Me and one of my teammates got caught stealing a bunch of groceries. And when you look at it, stealing is something that happens when you're poor, you know. And I've never been, you know, a lot of my friends have had it worse, way worse than me. But environment, improper guidance, and you know, bad decision making, you know. And that's why I mentor kids now through my family's foundation, the Devoted Dreamers Foundation. That's what we do, mentor kids, because we understand what they're in and how hard it is to make right decisions in the life that they're living right now and the environments that they're in right now. And so that's why we want to come alongside them and help them from falling through the cracks, you know. And that's where I was at that age. And so I'm grateful to God because he provided me an opportunity to make it out, but he also provided me to go to Arkansas State, because who's to say if I didn't go to Arkansas State that I would have ever met the man who changed my life. So I'm just grateful, man. That's the best thing that I can do. And I return my gratefulness by living a life indebted to God. And that's what moves me down to the border. That's what moves me to help somebody like Jose Bello. That's what moves me to speak out against mass incarceration. That's what moves me to take a trip out to Flint, Michigan. That's what moves me to have a foundation where we're mentoring kids. That's what moves me to do the things to encourage people beside me, like, hey, I'm going to go try to change a life today. I want to encourage you to do the same. And if we all take that mentality that I'm going to go change life and I'm going to motivate one person, we'll change the world. We'll change the world.
How torn were you on the kneeling in your league, given that your father served in the Army, given that you believe in this country's ideals? How complicated was that for you?
That was a very real conversation at the time. You know, when it happened, I think we were all kind of caught off guard, like, how do we really feel about this? And I think we were all in a place of, hey, first, let's not say that we don't love our country. We all love our country. That's what we need to have a conversation about, patriotism. But, hey, two, there are things wrong in our country. We need to address them. And the real question is not about, well, do we kneel or do we not kneel? It's how do we fix these issues in our country? And how do we conversate about them in a real way that's going to be solution-oriented? And so I'm glad we're past that conversation now, because now we can get to more real conversation, and we can have what was birthed out of that was the Player Coalition, which I'm a part of, that's partnering with the league to figure out, you know, how we can inspire change across the world and in our country and in these communities, and how we can fix things that are plaguing our black communities, such as police brutality and accountability, education disparity, better education in these neighborhoods, and criminal justice reform into mass incarceration. And we've been able to work on these issues in a lot of real ways. I'm so glad that, you know, the conversation came up, and I'm so glad at the same time that we're past something that was not helping to bring us together but was dividing us, actually. And now we're moving towards real solutions.
So you're in a place as a member of the Players Coalition where you're looking at what Jay-Z has done, and you're not being cynical about that. You're not judging it as a sellout at a time that America is taking sides on some of this stuff. You're looking at it and you're saying actionable items, just like he is. Now we can move this along to action.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. I think, you know, anybody that's talking about this in a negative way is being pessimistic. We don't know. I think anybody that's talking about it and saying it's going to be a great thing is just being optimistic. We don't know. It's too early to tell. That's just like a preseason. You coming out with predictions. You know, you either can be pessimistic and say a team is going to be bad, or optimistic and say a team is going to be good. We don't know. It's too early to tell. We don't know what the nature of this relationship is going to be. But if it has the opportunity to move us in the right direction, why not? Why not try it? So let's see. We have to give it time. And I'm not saying it's going to turn out good or it's going to turn out bad. All I know is, as for myself, what I'm going to do, I'm always be against injustice, and I'm always be for doing what's right or what I believe to be is right. And I can say that the same about my brothers in the coalition. because I know what we have been doing has been solution-oriented. So we're going to always be on the side of solution. Not necessarily always trying to be in the headlines or have a positive headline. A lot of things that we do, we actually do it under the radar. We're going to be on the side of solution. And I think that's what we as people need to get to, because especially in the social media era, we all want to just talk about our opinion. And opinions don't – I mean, I respect your opinion, but it's not going to get anything done. And so I'm going to always be standing on the side of solution.
Did you mention that you were 1 year in jail for shoplifting? A year?
No. I spent 3 days. But I could have, being now that I understand the seriousness of mass incarceration. Somebody goes in and they can't post their bail, they can be in jail for 7-8 months before they even have a trial. You know, that's the reality of it. And so my coaches posted my bail. Had my coaches not been there to post my bail, had I not been a student athlete, my life could look way different. Had I had to spend 6 to 7 months in jail because I couldn't pay bail, you think about somebody with a story like Khalif Browder, who had to spend 7 months in Rikers Island, the worst jail in the country, because he couldn't pay bail. He couldn't pay his bail. He had spent 7 months. And when he got out, he had PTSD. And he later ended up committing suicide. And so that just talks about, like, that's a story that embodies the injustices that are happening here in our country. And that's why I can't stay silent.
DeMario, a pleasure that you didn't stay silent here. Thank you for answering the questions, and much respect for your way of being. The NFL would be a better place if everybody was like you. Thank you, sir.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thank you guys for your time. You be blessed.
All we're trying to do here with the Lebatard and Friends Network is to give you a bunch of menu items so you can choose what it is you want and what it is that you like. And one of the things that we did with our football special is we got everyone together to give you about 10 minutes about football, get you excited for the football season in the voice, in the unique voice of each of the podcasts on this network, whether it be South Beach Sessions or Stupidity or Mina Kimes, Sarah Spain, Marty Smith. You can find all those things in one place with the Lebatard and Friends Network. We are asking you to subscribe, rate, and review so that we can continue to make this bigger and better and easier for you where you get your menu items. Mike, is there anything you want to tell them before we get out of here on our football special?
Yeah, and I think your essay to kick it off is quite brilliant. So make sure you check it out. Search Lebatard ampersand Friends on your favorite podcast platform of choice, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or go to our Twitter account and you'll see it's one of the pinned tweets on @LebatardShow. Great offerings from, as Dan said, all the shows on our network. It's something that we're really proud of. Make sure you listen to that essay at the very start. It is can't miss audio.